Would you like to study the Bible, but don't really know where to start? Bob Enyart's seminar on hermeneutics, tools for studying the Bible, will help you to study and understand the Bible on a whole new level. Hermeneutics, tools for studying the Bible, is available by calling 1-800-8-ENYART, or you can get the MP3 CD or the MP3 download at kgovstore.com. That's kgovstore.com.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
And Fred, today our topic is Real Science Friday.
So we're going to talk about our show.
We don't believe in the evolution of man from apes, but I do believe in the evolution of our show.
Yeah, I do too.
It's changed over time.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
In fact, I think a precursor to the show was back when you were on TV back in the 90s. That's the first time I ever saw you.
Yeah.
And that's where I learned a lot about creation and evolution. I got you inspired my exploding giraffe head on my website.
Fred, you have a very popular website, evolutionfairytale.org, and the artwork is great. It's a fun story you tell, and the forums are very effective. Because a lot of the garbage you have to put up with on a lot of forums, it's not there at your forum. So it's an honor to have you as a co-host of Real Science Friday. You are the webmaster for the esteemed Creation Research Society. So it's really been fun for years now. And do you recall when we first decided to formalize these shows and give it a title?
I do recall vaguely. I mean, you know, my memories of suffering the second law of thermodynamics decaying
right.
over time. But
right.
I do remember when you called and we kind of brainstormed on, you know, this creation show we were going to do and what to call it.
Entropy hits me a little worse than it hits you because I have no recollection. But I do remember that we modeled it after a program on National Public Radio.
Science Friday is the name of that show, and we thought, well, wait a minute now, there's Science Friday. We don't agree with a lot of their science, so we decided to call ours Real Science Friday.
Yeah, and on NPR, they're part of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and you know, the Republicans in the White House and Congress, they've given them, I remember when George Bush gave them $1 billion, a billion.
A billion,
a
wow.
$1 billion, and they promote atheism, homosexuality, abortion, evolution, and Democrats. So I don't quite get why the Republicans have given them hundreds of millions of dollars, but they use that money to turn people against Jesus Christ. And so they've got the show by their host on Fridays, Ira Flatow. Ira's show, everything is, there's no God, we've evolved from animals. And it's Science Friday, so we chose Real Science Friday. And we've heard from NPR.
Yeah, you've gotten some letters,
on
right?
On a couple of occasions over the years. And they have very politely asked us to stop using that name. And we have very politely ignored their request.
That's right, very politely.
Yeah, and we've talked to some of the leading Christian attorneys in the nation, and they've said, basically, you have every right to use the name. It's ethical, it's moral, it's legal, but it doesn't mean they might not sue you, and they might. It's possible.
It's possible.
That's why we put the whole show in your name.
So, so next week it might be Real Science Thursday?
Just might be. And God is the one who created the days of the week, and so we're taking back the colors, the rainbow, pink, Friday, everything. So we've been doing this for some years now, and if people go online to realsciencefriday.com, they can see all, we've got over 100 programs, and some of them are really fun.
Oh, they are. I can't believe the list of shows we got. And again, realsciencefriday.com.
Yeah.
And plus you can listen to these shows, right? They're all archived.
They're all archived. It's all free. Now, we do sell CDs that have like a year's worth on a single CD. So you could get Real Science Friday 2005, 2006, 2010.
Do you have a best of?
We have the best of on the website at realsciencefriday.com. And many people know kgov.com, and that's fine too. You could go to kgov.com, and right at the top, just click on Real Science Friday. So, yep. Fred, I'm hoping, how about we talk through a few of our shows, and there are honorary Real Science Friday shows.
Yeah, they were really precursors to before we actually started doing our co-host version of the show.
There are some of those, and then there are shows like on a Tuesday, but it happened to be about science.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there are precursors and there are honorary Real Science Friday shows. And so as long as it appears, how about this? Here's the rules. As long as it appears on our realsciencefriday.com website, then sure, any one of those shows, we could each pick, we could take turns picking favorite shows just to encourage the audience what we've been doing, the scope of what we're doing, and that they can share this with other people.
Well, Bob, there is one that I saw that I wasn't a part of. It was a little bit before my time. Fingerprints Could Not Evolve. I'm like, okay, that sounds interesting. That's an interesting topic.
Fingerprints could not evolve because neo-Darwinism, Charles Darwin, all the way up to Richard Dawkins, things will only evolve, especially complex systems, if they confer a survival advantage.
Survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
So
apes, for example, have fingerprints.
Apes have fingerprints.
There's only very few creatures, very few. You could count them on your fingertips. Very few creatures have fingerprints, but we do. And, Fred, think about if apes evolved, then there'd have to be a survival advantage for any sophisticated biological system made up of many different parts for it to evolve. Well, we're trying to figure out how would fingerprints help apes to evolve. And we here at Real Science Friday, we pretty much figured it out. And it's whenever an ape stole fruit from another ape, then the ape detective agency would come in with fingerprint powder, and they would do their crime scene investigation.
Is that Congo CSI or Zoo CSI?
Congo CSI. And they would make sure there was law and order in the forest. Now, obviously, that's not how it could have happened. And, Fred, you're a programmer. You're a software engineer. Would it be a simple matter, or could you describe to me just even what it would be like as an engineer if your boss said, we want you to design a system that works like fingerprints.
That works like fingerprints. So yeah. Everything would have to be individual.
For every organism in the species. So billions, and they'd all have to be different. And what are the other requirements? Well, they have to appear when the organism is a baby, an infant, even before it's born. They have to stay the same throughout their entire lifespan. And as your skin replenishes itself, and that happens relentlessly, I mean, your outer layer of skin are dead cells in your epidermis. And while millions, if not billions of dead cells are coming through your fingertips, as you grow, the ridges, the complex system of ridges has to stay the same.
On all of the fingers.
On all the fingers.
That's amazing.
And the toes.
You know, I've thought about that, and we haven't talked about this before the show. How to program that, I have the foggiest idea.
It would be enormously complicated.
I was thinking of, okay, you need some kind of random generator to make a slight change here and there.
Right.
But if you look at fingerprints, they're so uniform and so they're not like –
they have a
topsy-turvy.
Right, they have a comfortable
so well
design,
together.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, there's
something
appealing
to them,
to their design, yet they're functional, they're all different.
And they're all completely different.
Right, and we have to ask God, Lord, why did you put fingerprints on apes, you know? And my God is a person, and he enjoys beauty. He enjoys challenges. He likes to be an engineer and a mathematician. And I think if we get the chance to ask him that question in heaven, he'll say, because I enjoyed it. Why do you think I put all those stars and galaxies out there? Because it was fun. I did it for my pleasure, and I knew I would do it for Adam and Eve for purposes that we could use because of our intelligence, so I thought I'd try it out on some other creatures. It was fun.
So, Bob, are fingerprints completely unique? Like my fingerprints, no one's going to have anything like it in the whole world?
Well, you know, I don't recall.
But, you know, you never hear them say, well, there's
twins.
A...
twins.
Oh, that's
I don't recall. So maybe our crack producer could get us the answer
Al
to that.
Is that Al the 10th?
Al the 10th. Al the 7th is right.
Is that what it is, Al the 7th?
Al
I knew
the
it was way
seventh.
Up there.
Isn't that something?
That's his Bob's computer.
My computer is the 7th since we started the show. Al, we've been on the air for 20 years.
20 years. Yeah, so, I remember it was Al way back on your TV show.
My co-host was Al before it was Fred. So God has left his fingerprint on creation. Everywhere you look is evidence for God and proof that atheism is a lie. So does that mean it's now my turn?
Sure.
Because you picked a show. I'll pick one more recent. One of my favorite shows ever is The Caterpillar Kills Atheism. You remember that show?
Yeah, sure, I remember that show.
The caterpillar liquefying itself, going into this chrysalis, hanging upside down, and literally it digests itself. It produces enzymes that it eats itself. It liquefies itself. And then after it's liquid, it comes out, it emerges this beautiful flying creature with awesome beauty.
Of course, because that had to evolve because it was some survival advantage to that, right?
There's some survival advantage. So just imagine the lowly caterpillar figures out, you know, it wants a better status in life. It has ambition. It wants to see the world. And as a caterpillar, it has minimal opportunity. So it thinks, you know, if I liquefy myself, I could probably reassemble my parts into something with wings so I could fly. So the first caterpillars begun the process of trying to, like, change. And they started to dissolve. How are they going to get through that process and survive? How many millions of years of liquefied and evaporated caterpillars before the whole idea is ludicrous?
Oh, yeah. Ha ha, we're dissolving over here. We're going to be ahead of you guys in millions of years.
Right.
It makes no sense.
It makes no sense. And evolutionists believe their God is mutations. And they think mutations produced all the beauty in the world. Well, what if an evolutionist is married and they have a baby and the doctor comes and says, we need to let you know your child has a serious congenital mutation. Are they excited?
No, they're not going to like that.
Why wouldn't they be excited? That's what gave us all the beauty and wonder of the biological world.
That's what makes us related to a banana.
That's right. So, yeah, the evolutionist would be scared because they know that mutations are overwhelmingly neutral or harmful. And the more we're learning that the junk DNA is not junk, the more I think we're going to find out there are not very many neutral mutations. There are ones that don't make the harm obvious immediately, but there are so many redundancies in the human genome. God is so brilliant that you might have a mutation and it doesn't indicate harm because there's a redundancy, but now you no longer have the redundancy. So then in 100 years later, somebody else has a mutation there, and then you see the harm.
Oh, yeah. That's like with sickle cell anemia, right? I mean, that's one of the champions of evolution. One of their proofs is a disease. And if you get both copies of the sickle cell anemia mutation on both chromosomes.
We did a show on that.
Yeah, we did. That's another one of the shows.
Yeah.
But if you get the mutation on both the chromosomes, you're going to have a serious case of sickle cell anemia.
You're going to have a
And you're not going to live that.
And
you're,
Fred, you debate an evolutionist, right, on your forum.
Absolutely.
Evolutionfairytale.org.
And that's one of the examples I get. I get examples of cancer as evolution.
Cancer, disease. Yeah, and so here's the argument you and I have made on this show and elsewhere. Because evolutionists do not have good evidence for Darwinism, they use disease, and they'll fight to the death that a disease is good evidence for evolution. Darwin, did he use that evidence? Did he, you know, Darwin really tried hard to point to evidence for his theory of evolution. I do not recall him using disease as evidence, because he could point to his own children who were dying when they were young.
Oh, that's right.
And his lifelong weakness and ailment himself, and his friends who died, and he could say, look, these are all evidence of my theory, but he never did. In fact, Fred, what was weird, he believed that nature was the designing force weeding out the weak and the infirm. And actually, it was his family and his children who were being decimated, and even himself, by disease.
Yeah, and such ideas promoted racism. Darwin himself was a racist.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know the whole title of his book, Origin of the Species.
And?
The Preservation of Favored Races.
That's right. And, you know, AmericanRightToLife.org, the personhood group, if you just go to their website and put /Darwin at the end of their domain name up in your browser's address bar, you'll see a very short article on Darwin, which is Darwin in his own words. And people are shocked to see what a racist he was and what a sexist he was.
Yeah. Yeah. And his evolution theory really pushes that worldview. Yeah.
And you know what? When people say, well, he's just a product of his times, when a Christian defended slavery, owning a black human being as property, we condemn that. It didn't matter. They were expected to know better. Just like if Germans killed Jews and gypsies and innocent children, they were a product of their time. Give me a break. Wickedness is wickedness, and God holds us to a standard of his law, which is love God and love your neighbor.
That's right.
All right, so Fred, I did a show, Caterpillar Show.
How about Dancing Bees?
No Dancing Bees. That was a great show.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And I think it proves something about the claimed timeline of millions of years of separation was false. Do you remember the details? Because you just sprung this one on me.
Dance, they noticed the same pattern in dance in bees, regardless of where you are.
That's right. In the world, there were European honeybees and Asiatic bees.
So they weren't dancing like a Polynesian dance?
Evolutionists say those two species of bees had been separated for, I think, 6 million years. And so a researcher thought, well, let's bring them together because they won't be able to communicate, because it's like human beings that are separated on two different continents for 1,000 years. They speak totally different languages. So after millions of years, here's a language that honeybees use, and they have, what are they missing? They have no dictionaries. They have no grammar textbooks.
They don't have Al the Seventh.
They don't have Al the Seventh. They don't have the New England Primer or Webster's. They don't have any of that. And so they brought these bees together, and lo and behold, they understood one another, which is overwhelming evidence that the atheistic timeline is not true, and that, in fact, the Earth is young, and it was created by God in the recent past, just thousands of years ago, not billions of years ago.
Yeah, and they would dance in certain patterns to indicate some piece of information.
Right.
Like if some food that some worker bee found was really yummy,
yeah,
they would really dance a real flapping dance.
And, you know, and we still do that at my house.
Well, exactly. You know, if we're going to go to the Outback, I'm all over that. I'm dancing around.
Yeah, but I get up on the kitchen table and say, honey, guess what I made for dinner? She says, what? And I say, reservations.
Yeah. But if we're going to a salad bar, then there's a lot less excitement.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, bees will dance a certain pattern based on location, the quality of the food, etc. It's amazing.
Yeah. And then, okay, Fred, is it your turn or my turn?
Let's see. I think it's your turn.
All right. We're talking about some of our memorable Real Science Friday shows. And right on the homepage of realsciencefriday.com, it says, are you new to Real Science Friday? Start here. And there's a list of some of the best of Real Science Friday. And I think the ones you and I have been talking about, they're not even on the list, maybe one of them. But there is one on the list, and I love this one. It's The Origin of Language.
Oh, okay.
It turns out that Charles Darwin's theories on how language evolved have been completely disproved, not by creationists, but by the world's leading linguists. And this is so fun for me, because he thought that, well, first of all, there are primitive languages, like by native peoples around the world. And so all you have to do is go to any authority on language today, and you learn that there are no primitive languages. There is no known primitive languages in all the history of archaeology and so on.
In fact, they're more complex as you go farther back, right? They've deteriorated over time.
Many languages have deteriorated. They've become sloppy.
Try to read the original King James Bible.
Yeah, we've become sloppy. We're not improving. We're not evolving. We're devolving because of mutations. And Fred, this is what I loved. Everything Darwin thought about the evolution of languages, everything has been disproved, including he thought our languages evolved from the sounds of like dogs barking and animals screeching and all.
Like pig Latin?
Like pig Latin. And ubby-dubby language. And Fred, it turns out that linguists who are not Christians by any stretch or creationists like Edward Sapir and Noam Chomsky, they have demonstrated conclusively that human language is not a more sophisticated grunt or bark, that these are completely separate kinds of capabilities. For example, if you have a dog that has never met another dog, he still knows how to bark, and he's just fine, thank you. Human beings have to learn the particular rules of grammar and the vocabulary to know a language. And these are very different things, and children are wired for language. So these are all phenomenal evidences that language did not evolve, that it appeared suddenly in the recent past, as is evidenced by history and archaeology and rational, biological, scientific thought and the Bible, God's Word.
So it's kind of like a pseudo prediction of evolution of how languages evolved, and that yet it's another prediction per se that's falsified.
Falsified, and so many predictions of creationists have come true, and predictions that seemed contrary to the claims of the atheistic evolutionary worldview. Okay, I just did one.
Okay. Well, I like this one about how sponges are 70% human.
Now sponges are 70% human. That's a great show, because for years they told us that chimps are 98% human. And Fred, I don't know how dull. You know, if you are in rebellion against God, the Bible says, Jesus said, it's like being blinded, and they're willfully blind. Can't they just look at a chimp and a human being and realize there's more than a 2% difference?
Exactly. I mean, even when we considered 2% and we knew that it wasn't true, even then, mathematically, it wasn't possible for us to be related to chimps, because that's
That means millions and millions and millions of changes.
That's right. If we have a 3 billion nucleotide genome, let's say,
that's our DNA, three billion.
Yeah.
Letters.
3 billion letters. So how many would 2% of that be?
10% would be 300 million.
So
1% would be 30 million. So 60 million.
60 million base pair differences.
Changes.
All these changes that have to occur over allegedly 5 million years since we evolved from this.
Yeah, and it takes too many generations to evolve to get the one mutation in the whole genome.
Yeah, it's got to get one mutation in one animal or creature into all the creatures in the population over time. Everybody has to at some point get that mutation.
Right.
And they've shown mathematically that at most you could get like 1,600 in 10 million years.
In 10 million years, just 1,600, that's Haldane's dilemma.
And Haldane was an evolutionist. Oftentimes they disprove their own theory.
Right, and that's with very generous assumptions. And so forget 16,000. You need millions, tens of millions of changes, and changes all over the genome that supposedly would have evolved all over the world, and they all need to merge together. It is a mathematical absurdity.
It is. In fact, I sent an equation to this Dr. James Crowe. He publishes regularly in Nature magazine, And it showed that you would, using favorable assumptions for evolution, that each breeding couple would have to produce 40 offspring just to break even. Mm. And I was shocked at his response. He said that you've proposed a serious problem to a serious issue.
Wow.
And I asked, we got in an email discussion. And
that's why I love doing the show with you, Fred, because you make an effort to reach the scientists who are in the news, and you do it, and it's great. Thank you for doing that.
Sure. Well, I was also surprised to hear him say that, you know, I asked him, well, why do you believe in evolution? Because you're admitting that there's serious problems with the genetic side of it. And he said, because of all the evidences in the other sciences.
Yeah.
It's just like this linguistics guy who's an evolutionist probably say, well, yeah, we can't use language to prove it, so I won't use my field of expertise. Let's go look at the stars and astronomy or whatever.
Yeah.
A field of that they're not an expert in, they have to appeal to,
right,
to believe in evolution because their own field of expertise does not support it.
Yeah.
And same thing with the Big Bang, right? All these scientists that are astronomers that or astrophysicists that realize the physics doesn't work for the Big Bang theory.
Well, hey, Fred, we're almost out of time, maybe two more minutes, but some favorite shows, A Horse is a Horse, of course. We have had 500 of 1,000 Dinosaurs Go Poof. We've had the show on the cover story of New Scientist magazine, Darwin Was Wrong, about the Tree of Life. Another show, Darwin's Other Shoe, waiting for Darwin's Other Shoe to drop. Fred, so many fun interviews with scientist, one of my all-time favorites, Real Science Friday's list of not-so-old things.
Yeah, that's always fun. And you've got that list published on your website, kgov.com and realsciencefriday.com, right?
Yes.
You can go there, and it's a great list. We add to that list all the time.
And every year we update. It's an annual tradition. In January, we do the latest Real Science Friday's list of not-so-old things, where things that are supposed to be millions or even a billion years old or more, they're finding things like living bacteria in them, and carbon-14, which decays in just thousands of years, and soft tissue in dinosaurs.
That's right. And we've talked about like the mitochondria clock, and I like that show about gorillas, chimps, baboons, and gibbons.
that's got to be the
Because you said
funniest.
Gibbons, and I said and gibbons? Because she's this publisher. She's a scientist who regularly writes articles for Science Magazine.
Yeah, that's got to be the funniest title for any Real Science Friday show ever. What's the title of that?
Gorillas, Chimps, Baboons, and Gibbons. And, that's A-N-N. Your name
that's
is
her
Ann
name,
Gibbons.
Ann Gibbons. Gorillas, chimps, baboons, and gibbons. That's so funny because a gibbon is a primate. And she writes about mitochondrial Eve and how long we've evolved since chimps, supposedly. And when you put in the numbers, the actual mutation rates that have been studied, it turns out that mitochondrial Eve would have lived about 6,000 years ago scientifically.
That's right. She said, to quote almost, I think exactly, she would be a mere 6,000 years old. And then her very next sentence, but of course that can't be the case.
That can't be. So what they do is they recalibrate, they say, the mitochondrial clock by assuming chimp evolution. And they assume the conclusion they're trying to prove. So when, and it's, she published it, it's in the referee journals. If you don't assume chimp evolution and you just look at our mitochondrial DNA we get from our mom and the mutation rates, Eve lived about 6,000 years ago from science, from genetic science.
And that's what Real Science shows on Real Science Friday.
Real Science Friday. And on Wikipedia, that article said Real Science Friday. It's a funny thing. God bless you, Fred.